Morning, everybody. It's the Matt Bubala Show here on Radio 720 WGN. Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio in the historic Tribune Tower on the Magnificent Mile. It's a cold and rainy night out. It was a dark and stormy night, Roger.
Yeah, famous last words.
Yeah, Snoopy.
What are you, Snoopy, typing a...
I am Snoopy. Snoopy, you know, that's actually... Why did Schultz did that? Because I believe that had won some award as like the worst start to fiction in some year or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So Snoopy always started his stories with "It was a dark and stormy night." When my children were little, there was a book that I can't remember the name of now, but it was "A Dark and Stormy Night on Plum Street," and it was some children's book.
Ooh,
and it was one of my favorites that I read to the kids.
Now they're too old for that.
Oh, I bet if you sat them down and read them a story, they'd love it.
Nah. By the end of the day, they're pretty much tired of me and just want to go their own way.
Okay.
No, that's not true. We still read. We still read with the kids a little bit, with Tommy especially.
That's nice.
We do. Not often enough. It's hard anymore to have
time for that stuff.
Family time.
Family time is good time, Roger.
Yeah.
312-981-7200. Speaking of family time, and I would love a phone call from one of you out there to help guide me through what's about to happen in our household. Colleen has been telling me for the last month that she hears noises.
Oh, no.
But I never hear them when she hears them. She's like, there's something in the attic. Ah, there's nothing in the attic. We just got a new roof and new siding last year. There can't be anything in the attic. There's no holes that look around. There's nothing. There's nothing. You're hearing things. It's Anna in her room. You're hearing things. For like a month, she's been telling me there's something in the attic. I hear it. And I ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
Till last weekend when I heard a lot of stuff going on in the attic.
No way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's something living up there, and it ain't paying rent. Now, if I could figure out a way to charge it rent, I'd be fine with it.
Yeah, so right.
You can have the whole attic. It's all yours. Well, I'm good with that. So we had to call out a service that comes out. Actually, one of our neighbors, I mentioned it to him. Hey, do you know anybody? He's like, yeah, I got traps outside my house right now.
Oh.
Because a bird had apparently pecked away at some of the wood on their, what's that part that hangs off your roof over the edge?
Fascia
or the eaves, like just underneath there. They chipped away and put a little nest in there. And then some squirrel said, hey, that's a good place. And so they've been building stuff in there. But with ours, they're actually inside the attic and the roof, like in there. And so the guy came out tonight, and he never went in. I thought he would go into the attic because they're in the attic. Instead, he set up traps right outside, so when they come out in the day, that's where they'll get caught.
Do you hear the sounds all day and night?
Not all day and night, just at certain times.
Okay.
And, you know, most of our attic is actually that blown insulation.
Oh,
so you don't
hear
too much, but on the you'll hear them sometimes on the actual wood piece on the ceiling where you go up to the attic.
Right.
Where that's just what you hear as they go by.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy. At least one of them's for sure up there and probably having babies and stuff like that. And I imagine that's why they came in. And so he set up traps outside, and he said the adults will come out tomorrow during the day. They'll probably get in there. If the babies aren't old enough to come out yet, then we'll have to go in and get them and set traps in there.
So it's squirrels, he thinks?
That's our guess, because we see squirrels. There's a tree outside the house that we see them on all the time.
Okay.
And so we're pretty assured that that's what set up shop in there. And it appears that how they're getting in is we have one of those mushroom cap fans on the roof.
Yep.
And we think they've just kind of come in through there.
Yeah.
So after he gets them out, we're going to have to like get some screening or something like that on the inside of the attic and like staple that to the roof or something along those lines. Have you ever had...
You're going to put them out, those innocent little squirrels?
Oh, should I
put them out on the street?
Should I just set up something inside for them and make it comfortable and easy?
Yeah, sure.
Maybe like a cat scratching post, some, you know...
Mm-hmm. And charge them peanuts. I'm sorry.
Have you ever had a critter living in your house?
Yes, actually. We when we first moved into our apartment 30-aught years ago, we had mice, and we set up traps. We did traps, and we found them, and of course I had to clean out the traps.
Yeah.
Nobody else would go near them. But yeah, we haven't had any in a long, long at all. Now we got the rats out in the alley.
Yeah.
We've had that for several years. That's how I lost my garden, and they're still out, and they come out during the day. They don't care.
Bold rats.
Oh, very. They'll come out, they'll stop and look at you, and you go, you're going to keep moving? You're going to drop something, buddy? Come on, what's the deal? I got things to do here. And then they move on or whatever. But yeah, I'll go home this morning. I'll pull in, and sure enough, I'll see a couple of running.
When we first moved into our house, like a year or so in the basement, the people that lived there before us finished the basement. Mm. And instead of just like drywall on the walls, around the edges of three walls, they did a ledge that comes out from the wall a little bit, which is nice because we have like an English basement where you have windows, like larger than windows. Like it's not quite underground. We don't have a door. We can go out of our basement, but we have windows that are about chest high. It's not like the little windows up top. It's like nice size windows, like regular windows from your bedroom are in our basement.
Okay.
So we have about on one wall, we have about 4 foot high of this ledge with paneling in front, and then it kind of cuts around three ways, and then one wall's all paneling, but it's a sort of layered ledge.
Okay.
And so that paneling is about 6 inches off the wall. So there's kind of a space in there.
Oh.
And outside in the one corner of our backyard, there was some bent up pieces of siding, the old aluminum siding we used to have. And so Colleen was like, for a while, she's, there's a weird smell here in the basement. Oh, I'm like, it's a basement. It's musty. Oh. That's all it is. It's musty down there. I got to get a dehumidifier. She's like, yeah, I don't know. It smells really funny by that wall. And Colleen is an odd little bloodhound that she'll, I'll come home and have had Mexican food. And I'll walk in the door, and she'll be a good 30 feet away and look at me and say, did you have Burrito Beach today? And I'll say, yes, dear, I did. How do you know that? Because I can smell it from 40 feet away. And so eventually we thought we had heard maybe a mouse or something. We saw the thing outside. So we decided, all right, we might have mice here on this wall. So we take it apart, get it cracked open. See a mouse go running away. And we're like, okay, so what's the smell? Did a mouse die in there? No, the mice had been coming in to use the washroom apparently for about a year and a half. Because there
Did they flush?
A pile of mouse droppings. Ugh. Like you wouldn't believe.
Oh, gross.
Oh, it was bad. It was bad. Like I had to get a surgical mask and gloves because there was like, you couldn't even go. Oh, God. And then I set up traps, which they never use. Nothing even snapped, nothing. I had peanut butter and all the good
They're
stuff on there.
They're not stupid, these.
Yeah.
Seriously.
But so we got them out. We thought they were out. And then I sealed it up with all that foam sealant and stuff in the corners wherever we could. And then we never had the problem again, as far as I know. Haven't cracked open the wall again since we fixed it. But now we've got squirrels up in the ceiling. And I imagine there's people out there, 312-981-7200. What have you had living in your house? I've got a neighbor down the street with squirrels. I've had a buddy who's got a condo who's had like raccoons get in the ceiling. And they were so loud, he was scared to death. Like one of these is going to come right through this ceiling.
Yikes.
Yeah. And he's had to have people out to set up traps multiple times. The guy who was supposed to come out, set up our traps, they were supposed to come like at 1:30. He kept calling and said, I got to come later. I got to come later. He didn't end up coming till almost 8 o'clock tonight. And he said he was at a house like out in Addison. And they had to set up a trap because they had a fox or something living underneath their porch, things like that. So they'd set up these traps and they had left. And then they got a call because there were like baby foxes in this trap and it was pouring rain and it's all pouring into this hole and they were going to drown. So he had to drive back out there to get these traps. He's got this truck in our driveway. He's like, that thing is filled with animals right now that he had taken away today.
Because you can't kill him. You've got to take him out.
He doesn't kill him. He says there's
the forest.
There's private land that he takes him to.
Yeah.
And I imagine he pays some sort of fee for that. Because it's not, I don't know if you, it's not cheap to have this done, Roger.
No, it's not. No.
And it's, he set up these traps and it cost us a fee to have that done. Mm-hmm. And then they're charging us a fee for everything that gets in that trap.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like that idea. I mean, what if I have to pay like 18 times? Yeah, that's not going to be good.
But now you got a quiet a quiet attic.
I guess.
Now your wife can listen for other noises.
Oh, God.
Ghosts and stuff.
And smells.
And smells.
We have not had any ghosts in the house as of yet.
Yeah, good.
If we had ghosts, maybe they'd scare away the stupid squirrels. I'd take that. All right, let's jump right into this. I have not read enough about this. Shantae was telling me about it. I had read the headline. I thought it was an Onion headline. Donald Trump was really posing as his own spokesperson?
I saw those stories, too. Called into a radio show or a talk show and pretended they were speaking. He was speaking on behalf of Donald Trump.
A recording obtained by the Washington Post captures what New York reporters and editors who covered Trump's early career experienced in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Calls from Trump's Manhattan office that resulted in conversations with John Miller or John Barron, public relations men who sound precisely like Trump himself, who indeed are Trump, masquerading as an unusually helpful and boastful advocate for himself. Trump, when asked about the resurfaced tape on the Today Show Friday morning, flatly denied it was him posing as his spokesperson. I don't know anything about it. Doesn't sound like my voice at all. I have many, many people that are trying to imitate my voice. I have no idea. It's not me on the phone. He later pointed out that the call was allegedly made 25 years ago and changed the subject. Do we have audio of this, Shantae? Go ahead and hit this for us. Trump has never been terribly adamant about denying that he often made calls to reporters posing as someone else. From his earliest years in business, he occasionally called reporters using the name John Barron. A John Barron, described as a vice president of the Trump Organization, appeared in a front-page New York Times article as early as 1980, defending Trump's decision to destroy sculptures on the facade of the Bonwit Teller department store building, the Fifth Avenue landmark he was demolishing to make way for his Trump Tower. Barron was quoted variously as a Trump spokesman, Trump executive, or Trump representative in New York Magazine, The Washington Post, and other publications. Trump's fascination with the name Barron persisted for decades. When he was seeing Maples while still married to Ivana, he sometimes used the codename The Barron when he left messages for her. In 2004, when Trump commissioned a dramatic TV series based on the life of a New York real estate mogul like him, his only request to the writer was to name the main character Barron. And when Trump and his third wife, Melania, had a son, they named him Barron. In 1990, Trump testified in a court case that, quote, I believe on occasion I use that name. He did not respond to a request for comment for this article.
Wow.
Well, I don't, should we be annoyed, upset, surprised? Is this a big deal?
I don't think it's a big deal.
I don't think it's a big deal either. I think it's just more Donald Trump being Donald
Trump.
Yeah.
This guy, he can't stand being out of the limelight, I think.
Well,
he's thriving on this.
Well, and this isn't him bringing this up. This is something he's clearly trying to play down and move on from because it does
right.
make him look stupid or silly or even more pompous. But I can also, in a weird way, understand it. Here he is, especially back when he was really trying to make a name for himself, really put this image in the media of himself.
Mm-hmm.
I could see him not trusting other people to handle these things. He sees some article or somebody's asking questions. He wants to call him back, make sure they got the story right. And like not, I mean, it's great to be a spokesperson because you can speak for Donald, but you can't answer questions for Donald, right? You
right.
can sort of give them guidance. Well, I think he would say, well, I think this, he's doing mm-hmm. this, he's doing that. But you're never actually having to be him. It's like perfect.
Yeah, he doesn't strike me as one who would not take hands-on control over his own message.
Yeah, I think when you are rich and powerful or trying to really make a name for yourself, I imagine it's very hard to let go of some of that stuff. We'll have a little more on this after the news. Let's... It's the Matt Bubala Show, Radio 720, WGN. It's a little windy out there, Roger.
Just a tad.
It's going to be a chilly weekend.
Yes.
How do we go back and forth like this? So it's crazy.
You know, I was out golfing yesterday afternoon before the temperature dropped about 10 degrees, like in a heartbeat, and then the clouds came in. And we were talking about how, on the golf courses at least, golfers, spring started that, remember all of a sudden it got real warm
yes.
early, And the golf courses opened up a few days early, and everybody was out having a, and then 3-4 days later, all of a sudden, boom. And it, we have not had a decent stretch of warm, dry weather since. And I'm not a happy camper from a golfer
standpoint.
It's
affecting your golf game, isn't it, Rob?
Man, it is. Seriously, you wake up in the morning and go, oh, no, I can't get 9 in. It'll never happen. Or I'm tired of golfing in the cold and the rain.
Out in our neck of the woods tomorrow, it's going to be in the high 40s.
Wow.
And we're really not going to see much sun. It's going to be windy. We've got baseball we got to go to.
Oh, yeah.
If we can get it in. We're canceling games like crazy. Nothing annoys Little League volunteers more than 1,800 rainouts.
I know.
Got to try to make them all up because people paid their money to play these games. But you don't have enough fields. You don't have enough time.
Right. Because you take it up through what? Through August?
Well, no. Because here's the thing. Little League has all-star tournaments at the end of the season, you know, at 10, 11, and 12 years of age.
Yeah.
Actually, in ours, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12.
Okay.
So those are all at a set time. So your season has to end before then. We have an end-of-the-season tournament in-house, so all of these games got to get in. Our end-of-the-season tournament starts on Saturday, June 11th.
Wow.
So we've got a month of the season left. And only so many dates to put these games because we only have so many fields and we only have one field that has lights. So we only have one place where people can play night games on a weeknight. Everything else, 6 o'clock game on the week.
Well, how do you do double headers? What do you do?
You can only do double headers at the very old ages of Little League. Otherwise, that's not allowed because you can't overtax the kids. So there's a lot of Sunday makeups and things like that. And we only have so many Sundays to make them up.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
I hope you get some in, at least.
We get most of them in, but it's a lot of guys and wives and husbands spending their afternoon with a shop vac on a field, taking water off of it and things like that, trying to get those things, you know, playable enough by 6 o'clock at night.
And it's hard when it's been cold and you...
Well, if we don't get any sun and wind, then the frozen hasn't been an issue. There's been so much rain that even if you get a few dry hours, it's a mud pit. Yeah. So it's not enough to even get a tractor on it to turn it over to let it dry out. So so it's been interesting to say the least. But there's bigger problems in the world.
Yes, there are.
That will all be taken care of when President Donald Trump takes over.
What?
Now, I'm making light of this, but texture from 312 says, Matt, this is a big deal. Who behaves like this? The man is psychotic, disturbed. The game he's playing is for the most powerful position in the world. I've gotten to a place where I'm resigning myself to the fact that he's the next president. And I've got a friend who says, she's from Canada originally. She says she's moving back when he becomes president. And I said, people will annoy me. I can put up with a lot of stuff. Don't start the whole, I'm moving out of the country, Alec Baldwin nonsense. Because you have to stay here if you're upset about something and fight for what you believe in then fight to overturn things, to change things. If he's president, make sure people are elected that will not give him too much power, whatever, whatever, whatever. Don't give me the, I'm leaving the country. Drives me insane. You don't get to leave the country.
No.
If Washington had said, I hate these taxes, I'm going to Mexico. Well, that wouldn't have worked out for us, right?
Right.
That would have been bad.
Sure.
Stay. You've got to fight for your right to party, I believe D. Snyder once said.
I believe he did.
We have more Donald Trump as Donald Trump. Shante, go ahead and hit the next cut.
He's got this PR machine that I guess you people play too very well, but it really was nonsense. So anyway, but I don't think we ever reported that about Madonna. No, she called and wanted to go out with him, that I can tell you. And one of the other people that you're writing about, by the way, I'm sort of new here, and I'm... Well, I'm sort of handling PR because he gets so much of it. And frankly, I can tell you off the record. Can I get to know you and talk a little bit off the record? I can tell you that he didn't care if he got bad PR until he got his divorce finished.
Wait a minute. Who goes off the record on the radio?
No, this is not on the radio. These are recordings that a reporter made. And this was a reporter at the, where were they, Shante? At the New York... One of the New York... Sue Carswell was a reporter at People Magazine. And so he's calling her and, you know, giving her some information. She had called his office asking for an interview because she was assigned to Trump to cover his divorce from Marla. Mm-hmm. Or no, I'm sorry, from Ivana. And he was having the affair with Marla Maples and this whole thing. And so she had called his office asking for an interview. 5 minutes later, John Miller, as he was going by at this point, called back to give her some information. And he's talking about Madonna. And apparently, as I read in the story, so she does this, she talks to this guy for a while and then says, it's crazy that he sounded so much like Donald Trump. And so she took it down to some other people in the office and they're like, that's Donald Trump. And then she took it over to Cindy Adams, who's a longtime gossip columnist who knew Donald very well. And she said, oh, that's Donald. What's he doing? We've got one more. Go ahead and hit that, Shantae.
I've sort of been put in here to handle because I've never seen anybody get so many calls from the press.
Where did you come from?
I basically work for different firms. I work for a couple of different firms. And I'm somebody that knows. And I think somebody that he trusts and likes. So I'm going to do this a little part-time and then,
I'm going to do this a little part-time.
Yeah, he keeps evading, like, what company do you work for?
Oh, yeah.
What's your company?
Yeah, I just got here. I'm helping him out. I've never seen somebody get so much press. It's tremendous. It's tremendous.
It's huge.
According to the story, Carswell was far from the only reporter who received calls suspiciously from Trumpian characters. Longtime New York Daily News columnist Linda Stasi said Trump once left her a voicemail from a, quote, anonymous tipster who wanted it known that Trump had been spotted going out with models. And editors at New York tabloids said calls from Barron were at points so common that they became a recurring joke on the city desk. After Carswell's story appeared, headlined, Trump says goodbye, Marla, hello, Carla, and a mysterious PR man who sounds just like Donald calls to spread the story. That was in the headline. It says Trump then invited the reporter out for a night on the town with him and Maples. Carswell says Maples persuaded Trump to issue the invitation as an apology for tricking her. A few weeks later, when people ran a story about Trump and Maples getting engaged, Trump was quoted as saying that the John Miller joke or the John Miller call was, quote, a joke gone awry. So he hasn't always denied that he ever did this. Now he doesn't really want to play up that part of his past.
Yeah, well, the stakes are higher now.
The stakes are higher.
Before it was just like getting girls. Now he wants to be president.
Oh, I apologize. 262. That was not Twisted Sister said you have to fight for your right to party. That was the Beastie Boys.
Oh, Dee Snider?
The Tribune regrets the Dee Snider's with Twisted Sister.
Yeah.
And they sang something. I can't remember what now.
I thought it was a party song. It was like,
Shantae, you have to know this. What's Twisted Sister's song? They had one. I believe it was just one. We'll look that up. Right. We'll look that up. Or the texter will yell at me and tell me. But the Beastie Boys, the Beastie Boys saying you've got to fight for your right to party.
See, there's...
We're not going to take it, would be Twisted Sister.
Oh, and... it doesn't sound the same. Yeah.
No.
I was just, I'm playing it in my brain.
John Miller will call and defend Matt Bubala from this. He's under a tremendous amount of pressure, and the Beastie Boys and Twisted Sister were kind of the same time period. I've never seen somebody get so many calls from the press. He's dating like three models. It's terrible. It's terrible. He's wonderful. He's a great person. He never hurt Marla. But I have resigned to Trump as president just because it's kind of one of those things where if you don't expect too much, you can't be disappointed. So I'm just going to go about my day thinking he's our next president, and then I'll be wildly surprised if he's not.
Well, there you go.
I'm not going to vote for him. I'm not going to encourage his presidency, but...
So emote from an emotional standpoint.
Yeah, I'll just resign myself to this is my next 4 years.
Okay.
And we'll figure out how to make that the best possible 4 years we can.
Okay.
And then, if he doesn't end up being president, then hey, look at that. He didn't end up being president.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you take your chances that they'll have a good lunch for hot lunch that day and bring some money and, assume you're going to eat something like cod and be disappointed. But then suddenly they have cheeseburgers. You're like, hey, they had cheeseburgers today. That worked out well.
Yeah. Well, I like the way you're looking at this.
I think that's the only way you could look at it.
Because you'd, be depressed if you thought it wouldn't be that way?
If I was going to spend the next 6 months... Mm-hmm. Like, really, like, oh, my God, Trump better not be president. He better not be. I can't believe, if I did that, then I'm just setting myself up for 4 years of misery, right? I mean, because if he becomes president.
Now you got to deal with him.
Then you got to deal with it. But if I'm just like, he's going to be president and pray that we're going to survive this.
Mm-hmm.
People are saying who's somebody said it's going to be our last president. Johnny Depp said, I can't believe
it. Oh, I remember
Johnny Depp
that.
On politics. Yeah. He said Donald Trump will be the last U.S. president because apparently this will be the fall, which I believe that our democracy is strong enough to handle. This will be the test. We'll see how strong this democracy is.
Okay.
Because it'll be interesting. But who knows? You know, he's got so much time. He's going to come so far to the middle over the next 6 months. And I think he's going to get elected because so many people are so anti-Hillary. It stuns me. I can't believe how much people hate Hillary Clinton. And I don't understand it. And people say she's a criminal. She's this. She's that. Her husband enjoys incredible popularity.
Yeah.
Why are we so anti-Hillary? And you could say Benghazi. You could say the emails. You could say all these things that... other people have run into the same issues with emails from private servers.
Right.
The Benghazi thing, maybe mistakes were made. Maybe bad things happened. I know people died, but I don't see how that's been linked as her, you know, treasonous act or anything like that. There is just something people cannot stand about Hillary. I don't know if it's Clinton backlash. I don't think it is, because if Bill was running for office this year, he'd win. I do believe that.
Even with all his issues.
He left office more popular than ever and has enjoyed tremendous popularity since then.
I know, but he's had issues that have come to the fore.
He had issues while he was in office.
Yeah.
The man was impeached, Raj, and we'd put him back in office. He lied about sexual activity in the White House. Yeah. He fooled around with an intern. He was impeached. He wasn't convicted of the articles of impeachment, but he was impeached and then went on to leave office when he left office, he would have, I believe polls showed at the time, if he was eligible, he would have gotten a third term because the economy was good.
The economy was
good. And that's all we care about.
Yeah.
The economy was good.
It's all about the money.
It is. It is. So I don't understand this anti-Hillary sentiment. I understand you don't like people, things like that, but there is, and I've had family members who are so, I hate Trump. I hate Trump. I hate Trump. Also, you won't vote for Trump. Well, I'm not voting for Hillary. And this is how the guy's going to get elected, is because the anti-Hillary wave is going to be stronger than the anti-Trump wave, because the Trump is going to be, let's take a shot at this. And with the Hillary thing, they're going to be like, we already hate Hillary. We don't like Hillary. Hillary's already had her time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. I don't understand it.
I got to throw out Bernie, because there has been a movement to get rid of the superdelegates, which right now are what are keeping Hillary in front. And this may come to a battle at the convention, I think. And so Hillary may still not be a guaranteed thing yet.
I would be stunned if Hillary is not the nominee. I know Bernie keeps winning the primaries in different places, but even without the superdelegates, she still has a decent lead, right?
Not as decent. Those superdelegates,
not nearly as much.
Not
nearly as much.
She's got a ton of them.
She does.
And ton, I mean a couple hundred.
Well, she's got
more than enough to distance herself from Bernie.
You take away the superdelegates, it's actually very close.
Yeah.
And I know his camp is trying to convince people to rethink their superdelegate votes, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's going to happen. I think that eventually she's going to put him away. We'll see. I would be okay with him running, too. That would be interesting. Mm-hmm. But I feel bad for Hillary in that the woman put up with a lot.
Yeah?
A lot. And a lot of that's her own doing, too, I know. But she has put in the time and the effort. I mean, she was first lady for 8 years. And she wasn't just, reading to the kids first lady.
No, she's very
She was
active.
Involved.
Yeah.
Then she runs for Senate. She does that. Then she's
Secretary of State.
Secretary of State.
After running for presidency.
After running for president.
Yeah.
So she has served her time. She has been in the office. She has got a ton of experience.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you think she's done a lot with it or not, okay. But she has been around and she would know from day one what needs to be done, what she's got to do. There wouldn't be a huge learning curve.
Right.
Maybe you disagree with the things that were done, but you wouldn't say she went in there not knowing what in the world she was doing. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Trump, on the other hand.
Wow.
You know, this is the guy we're going to hand the nuclear codes to, who's threatening other countries, doing all that stuff, just creating divisions wherever he goes. We'll see how far he comes to the middle. Now he's got to start playing to the middle. And the party that said they would never vote for him, they'd never support him, one by one, they're coming around.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to stop the Obama White House. We've got to repeal Obamacare, so they're going to get behind him. And I think the only thing that can stop Trump is Trump himself. I don't know.
Yeah, well, because he's doing it all himself.
Do something crazy enough to completely screw this up. But Trump being Trump has gotten him here. Will Trump being Trump undo it all as well is the question. I don't know.
How many more months before the conventions? August?
I thought June and July, no?
June and July.
Or July and August? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Cleveland, I know, for the Republicans. Where are the Dems at?
I'm not sure.
Nobody's even thought about the Democratic one. Republican one's the only one we've thought about. Will Cleveland survive the Republican convention? Philadelphia is where the Dems
Philadelphia.
Are. Oof, right. That's a tough town to go into, too.
Yeah.
Well, it will be an interesting summer, Raj.
Oh, yeah.
It's the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. If you're a big Game of Thrones fan, I'm guessing you might want to pick up a sword once in a while or participate in combat in some way. It looks so cool, but how would you ever do it? How would you get started doing it? Would you get hurt right away if you ever did something like that? Well, there's actually an Armored Combat League, and one of the founders joins us on the phone right now, Andre Sinu. Hey, Andre, how are you?
Great, Matt. Pleased to meet you.
Nice to meet you. So you're the co-founder of the Armored Combat League. Explain to me in a nutshell, what is the Armored Combat League?
Well, the Armored Combat League was formed by Jay Brooks and myself back in 2011 as a national league. It's across the nation to basically have a competition with men and women wearing armor, and it's sort of like MMA but with weapons. The rules are we have single combat, and single combat is one-on-one, and you're basically trying to see who can hit the other person more times within a minute-and-a-half time period, and they go for three rounds. And then we have melee combat, which is 5-on-5, 10-on-10, and 16-on-16. And then those rules are slightly different. That idea is to get somebody to either submit because they're getting hit so hard or put them down to the ground.
All right, and how are they fight? What are they fighting with? They're armored up, so like we would see a knight in, like, you know. And I'm sorry to, I don't know if it annoys you, the Game of Thrones referrals, because that's kind of like in the zeitgeist right now. What everybody knows, I think we've seen armored battle on that. Are we dressed?
No, that doesn't bother me at all.
Okay, are we dressed up like knights on something like that? Armor all around and protective outfits all around.
Yeah, actually, what we're wearing is more historic than what you're going to see on Game of Thrones. We have to follow more of a historic analog for our armor. A lot of the stuff you see on Game of Thrones is leather armor. We're wearing steel armor. We have to wear steel armor because it's full force, full contact. It's not choreographed. It's not like something you go to see at a dinner show or at a ren fair.
Right.
These guys are out there. They're really, really competing. They're trying to go at it. They're trying to put people down hard. And they're trying to do it, like I said, either with, hitting somebody so hard that they give up or putting them down to the ground.
Now, hitting them with what? Are we fighting with swords, with jousting poles, with what were those things, the blockers called, the shields? I mean, we have all that stuff you would normally think of for a time period sort of medieval type thing?
Well, it's all of the ground combat weapons. So we're not going to have jousting. We're not using horses. It's all ground combat. So people are on their feet. And, yeah, they're going to use any weapon from the time period, just about any weapon from the time period. Now, we have rules on our weapons to mitigate serious injury, and we haven't had a serious injury in going on 5 years since the inception. But basically, yeah, they're going to see people out there with swords, with axes, and these are steel weapons, maces, pole axes. I mean, they're the real deal. They're just not sharp. They're rebated edges, which is basically a dull edge. And they've got the width of basically about a quarter in width.
It still sounds like very dangerous. I mean, I know they're not sharpened, but they're even blunt objects like that. An axe, even if it's got a blunt blade, it's still a very, thin thing coming at you very hard, or a mace. People have really not gotten seriously hurt doing this. It's amazing.
Yeah, not in the United States, but you know, we're wearing armor from head to toe, and you have to follow the rules. So both the weapons and the armor are tested before we enter any sort of tournament, and they're rechecked again even during a tournament, because sometimes weapons chip up, and you know, there's referees out there, and they're checking those pieces of equipment. Not only the weapons, but your armor, to make sure that we're mitigating any serious injury. You'd be surprised, if you're wearing good armor really does work. Half the time you don't even know you've been hit.
Well, and with armor, let me ask you, because when you see it in movies and stuff, it doesn't look like there's any padding inside. You're just wearing steel on your body. Are these very modern pieces of steel that are, you know, made up of these, you know, kind of night outfits? I imagine there's padding underneath them, so you're not just taking a blow on metal that's just stopping you from actually being cut.
Well, you're absolutely right, Matt. We're wearing padding underneath, and just like they did wear in period, we're wearing padding on our arms, our legs, our body, even our heads. And there is some modern equipment. Some people are wearing modern concussion padding. We're wearing modern concussion padding in all the helmets. And then in addition to that, you're wearing a cloth period pad. So, you know, you think that getting hit in the head has got to be the worst, absolute worst thing that could happen to you, but the head is probably one of the most protected, and you know, we don't have concussions regularly. It's you know, like I said, we're really, really looking out for the members of our community, and we make sure that we have the high standards. And the United States has the highest armor standards around the world.
Do you do it by weight and class? Do you, like, do class size? Because I think of somebody who's 6'4", 280, versus somebody like me who's 5'8" on a good day. I'm going to get killed no matter how blunt his objects are. How do you separate out who fights each other?
Well, if you're doing the night fights, and the night fights are kind of, you know, punching, kicking, weapon throws, one-on-one, they do go by weight class. If you're just doing the one-on-one just for the style, it's an unlimited, you know, there's no weight classes, and there's no weight classes at all with the melees. But everybody brings something to the table. You know, you might have a big, big, strong guy like the Mountain, for example, on the Game of Thrones. The guy's gigantic.
Right.
But a small person that can move quickly and is athletic could take out somebody that's very large, and we see it happen time and time again. That being said, the United States team, when we go overseas, the best way to describe it is I usually bring American football players to play against European soccer players. Mm. We're by far much larger than most of the Europeans.
And does that pay off in the end? Usually?
It does. It does. We're also older. Most of the Europeans are in their 20s. It's easy for them to travel around Europe. It's fairly inexpensive if you're a European to move around in Europe. And as anybody knows that's tried to go from the United States to Europe, it's extremely expensive. So it's usually an older, more established person that can make it over to Europe, because currently we don't have any sponsors. And we, you know, if anybody's listening and wants to sponsor the United States team, we are the official United States team. We are a 501(c) tax-free status. We just don't have any. We have no sponsors at the moment.
Have you reached out to Medieval Times?
No, I don't think that they'd be interested. I've sent a couple letters to Under Armour, because we've actually do wear Under Armour shirts under our armor.
Yeah.
And I thought that, you know, that would be a perfect fit, but they haven't been forthcoming with any sort of response, though. So.
Not yet. Well, maybe it's going to take some time and a little more publicity to get it going.
Yeah.
How heavy is the armor? Because it's padded, so I imagine it can be relatively light. You think about the pieces you see from Game of Thrones or other things that are of a time that seems like that. It seems like it would be insanely heavy, hard to see, hard to move. Is it much more modern than that?
Well, you know, the best armors, and you had mentioned something earlier too, you know, about modern armor as composed compared to the ancient or the medieval armors. These guys really knew their stuff back in the day, and they were doing it day in, day out, and they had to do it because people's lives depended on it. So they were really, really good at what they do. The only advantage that we have nowadays is we have better materials to work with. So weight can vary depending on the materials that are used, because some materials will give you more protection. You know, you can have a thinner, lightweight. It has to be steel. So we're not using aluminum. We're not using titanium. It's got to be a steel product. But there are so many different types of steel. And there's spring steel, which is lighter and stronger. And, I make armor out of 301 spring stainless, which is extremely light, extremely strong. So the weight of an armor could be anywhere between 60 and 90 pounds. And the heaviest piece of armor would be your helmet, because you need to have something mass, that's got some mass behind it. So it can absorb a lot of that kinetic energy when you're getting hit in the head. The body's fairly light.
Does it all look like classic true armor? I mean, on the mask, they don't have an actual hockey mask or a visor or football thing over it. It looks like something that you could step out of a movie or a time period.
Yeah, for the most part, it does look like medieval armor. We actually have aesthetic standards, and we have people that are in charge of the period look of the armor to make sure that somebody's not walking out there with space armor, you know?
Yeah.
And you can't go out there with, you know, a Viking helmet, 15th century body armor, because that looks strange, too. So we have guys that are pretty well studied, and they look over the armor and they say, hey, this, you know, it's got to be within 50 years. So if you're wearing a helmet from 1450, you know, you've got to have the armor that's got to be within 50 years of that.
Oh, that's interesting. So nobody gets to come out in a stormtrooper outfit and look like a goofball. You make sure
it's
real.
Exactly. This is not, to each their own. Everybody has their thing, and I don't look down at anybody's sport, but this is much more historically accurate. And even the melees are fairly historic. The idea is that when you get down to the ground, you're extremely vulnerable. And a knight was vulnerable when he was down on the ground. When he was standing and you're wearing full armor, you're nearly invulnerable. But once you hit the ground, you've got some areas that are exposed to daggers. Your visor is open. You know, you can get something through the eye slot in the visor. You can go into the gorget, which is around the neck area, underneath the armpits, in the groin area. These are areas where, you know, you could finish somebody off once they were on the ground.
We're speaking with Andre Sinou. He is the captain of the national sword fighting team, the USA Knights. You can find out more at usaknights.com. We're talking about the Armored Combat League. We'll find out more about that. And twice now we've heard him mention a melee. What in the heck is a melee? It sounds awful. We'll find out next. Matt Bubala with you, Radio 720 WGN. Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. We're speaking with Andre Sinou, one of the co-founders of the Armored Combat League. And Andre, you mentioned twice now melees, and I'm guessing that's like a million people in the ring at once and it's just a melee. Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah, melee is anytime you have more than one-on-one fighting.
Okay.
You know, you've got one-on-one is called single combat. If you have two-on-two, it's a small melee. Our melees are 5-on-5, 10-on-10, and 16-on-16.
16-on-16. That must be fascinating to watch. And how does that generally work out? Is it very tentative, or as soon as one person gets involved with somebody else tries to, you know, on that team tries to get behind them and cut them out, or are there ground rules that it's got to be one-on-one within the melee? How does that work?
No, it's you know, basically as many guys as you want to get in on it. If you can get six guys on one person and put them down quickly and move on to the next, that's a great strategy. Where you see different strategies is at the World Championship, because you don't see a lot of 16-on-16 stateside. That's where we're really doing that 16-on-16 is overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And where you see the difference is when you see a young team, a bunch of young guys from in their 20s on a new country that's just joined up in the scene. A lot of those guys will walk straight out and they'll just look across, you know, the guy directly across from them. You know, when I take the field, I'm a Marine Corps officer, so I've used strategies and tactics, and we break everything up into three teams, basically, when we walk out with sub-commanders, and we go out in a formation, and we line up, you know, with wings, and the wings are in echelon, and we kind of draw them into the center, and we have a great strategy, and it works really well for us. And we're very patient. You know, being the older guys out there, that our average team guys are probably about 42 years old, and the average European's probably around 26. So we've got patience, and when the young guys go running out from the European teams and they run one person out to the middle of the line, you know, they'll have four Americans jump them and put them down real quick, and then they'll step right back into their position on the line and hold the line again.
How is it scored or judged? Is it on style points, or is it just once somebody's down and gives up, then that's a win?
Yeah, melee is last man standing. So once you either hit the ground or you raise your hand in submission, you're out, and it's for the last man standing. The one-on-ones are counted blows, so it's how many times you get hit compared to how many times you've hit your opponent in a minute and a half, 3 minute and a half periods.
3.5-minute periods. That doesn't sound like a lot. That's only, what, 4.5 minutes of fighting. But I imagine if they make it to the end of 3.5 minutes, they're just wiped out.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of interesting because, you know, keep in mind, you're carrying all that weight. 60 pounds is a fairly light harness, and there's people of all different sizes. So a guy like me, I'm 6'3", 250 pounds. I'm a fairly muscular guy. I'm built like a football player. Wearing 60 pounds of armor for me is no big deal. If you go out there and you're 150 pounds and you're wearing 60 pounds of armor, well, that's, you know, nearly a third of your body. It's over a third of your body weight. So, you know, you're fighting the endurance of pulling that weight around with you at the same time. So you'd be surprised, you know, you see some big guys running around in the field, and you're like, man, that big guy's really running around a lot. And that little guy, you know, who's a, you know, long-distance runner, he's not running around so much. Well, that's because he's wiped out. He's got no more endurance left because he's been carrying all that weight.
You mentioned the league started in 2011. Has armored combat as a sport been around for a long time, or is this recent with all the, you know, the love for Game of Thrones and other shows like that?
Well, you know, I don't know what the history is of the broad term armored combat. You know, we know it was around in medieval days and certainly in ancient times. It certainly had a period of renaissance in the 1800s. But in recent history, in the organizations that we fight in, the Eastern Europeans started fighting in a league probably about 5 years before us. And we had heard that, you know, there was a lot of Europeans that were getting involved. It actually started with Russia, Ukraine, Belarus, and Poland. And then, you know, some more European countries started getting involved. And the United States heard, you know, we heard about it. And Jay and I had actually been involved in another organization where we fought with basically rattan weapons, which is like a wood weapon. And we've been doing it for almost 25 years, and we've gotten as high ranked as we possibly can. And it's a great organization, but once you've done something for a long time, you kind of look for something new, you know, and exciting. And when we heard about the steel fighting, we jumped on the opportunity of building a new organization and building an American team.
Wow. And so you said you're looking for sponsors. Are you also looking for players and organizers? And you had mentioned off the air that Chicago is not as organized as some of the other areas. What do we need to get more armored combat here in Chicago?
Well, listen, if anybody wants to get involved in Chicago, I have people. I've got a regional commander out that way. If you can contact us, you can contact me personally at icefalcon@comcast.net, or you can go to the Armored Combat League sites, look us up. There's contact information, and you can start your own chapters. That's part of the fun is the creativity. If you've got three people and you join the league, and the league's very inexpensive. It's $50 a year to join, so it's really kind of small beans to join. But if you get three people in your city, I would love to have a chapter in Chicago, which we do not have at the moment. You can start your own chapter in Chicago and then start meeting people from all over the United States and maybe possibly have a shot at being part of the national team and going overseas with us.
icefalcon@comcast.net. That's a really good email address. icefalcon@comcast.net. So what would the cost? So you mentioned only $50 to join the league. To get all the armor you need to get a weapon to really start fighting, how much does that cost? And if somebody organized something here in Chicago, where would they fight at?
Well, it depends on who's local and what the resources are local. I mean, we've used everything from gyms to work out in and practice. And you don't fight every single weekend or every single week. Which a lot of times when you go to practice, you're working out, you're working on moves, you're doing a lot of unarmored stuff. And then, you know, a couple times a month you're putting on armor because we're trying to mitigate the amount of injuries. Just like a professional boxer is not going to box somebody, you know, full out, you know, a couple times a week, because you want to kind of mitigate the amount of injuries. So basically the groups will get together, at gyms. We use horse arenas for some of our larger activities and other arenas along those lines, state fairgrounds. And the armor cost is basically the one step that's hard for everybody. But once you have your armor, the rest of it's fairly inexpensive. But the armor cost to get a decent suit of armor, they start at about $2,500 and then go up from there. So it's not cheap, but you know what? You want to make sure that you're protecting your body from, you know, from steel weapons. So you don't want to buy, you know, garbage either. You want to protect yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's
again, if the sponsorships would come in handy, if we can get people, you know, suits of armor that we can put some of our, you know, some of the real potential players in, sponsorship would go a long way, you know, to help that out. We fly overseas on our own dollar. You know, if we had like one of the airline companies say, hey, we'd love to sponsor the national team, like US Air or
yeah.
American or United, you know, one of these American, all American airlines, even if it was just helping us out with baggage fees, because you can imagine when we're traveling with heavy armor and,
yeah.
you know, we're getting whaled with baggage fees.
I can only imagine. IceFalcon@comcast.net for more information, but you can also visit Armored, what is it? What's the USAKnights.com? It's
right.
The Armored Combat League. Andre Sanu, thank you so much for jumping on the phone.
Hey, I really appreciate it, Matt. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. Sometimes Roger just gets giggly, people. There's nothing that can be done about it. It's the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. I get to fill in for the opening bell one day this week. Mr. Grzanich, I believe, is taking a morning off. So on Thursday, Raj, I will be the host of the opening bell.
Ooh,
for
man,
one,
you're
for,
getting
for
around.
One whole hour.
What? That's right. It's
a short show.
Yeah,
it's
right.
a short
yeah,
show.
Right.
Not a lot you can do in that show.
Oh, they
well,
cram
like,
a whole bunch of
yeah, well, I can't
hour.
Sit there and screw around with you for 20 minutes. So
no,
they're not going to allow that.
No. That's not going to happen.
Can't engage Vic Vaughn in a Winnebago saying contest.
Ogle.
Okay. All right, moving on.
Yes, sir.
There were some cancellations. There was a big, like, Black Friday in Hollywood
yeah,
this week.
Yeah, I saw that.
A bunch of TV shows were canceled. Castle, maybe one of the most famous. Nashville got canceled. I don't think a lot of people are necessarily watching all those shows anymore. The one I was sad to see canceled, although it wasn't as good as it should have been, is the latest incarnation of The Muppet Show.
Yeah. I didn't have any feelings for it the very first time. I saw the first episode because I'm thinking, wow, The Muppets are back.
Yeah.
And, boy, just totally underwhelmed. I like the concept of the show this time around. It just didn't play.
The concept was Miss Piggy had a nighttime talk show, mm-hmm. like a late show or a tonight show. And Muppet was Kermit was the executive producer, and all the Muppets worked behind the scenes. Fozzie was like the announcer. It was a good concept overall. It didn't work that great. They kind of tried to retool it halfway through the first season. There was some really funny, very adult humor.
Yeah.
Very, like, when we would watch it with our 10-year-olds and our 14-year-old, our 14-year-old would look at Colleen and I like, the kids shouldn't be watching this. And we're like, it's okay, they don't get it. But there was some serious sexual innuendo and other jokes in this that were really good. And so it had its moments, and it's really unfortunate because I love the Muppets, and it was good to see them back on TV again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it was kind of an adult show, which was nice. It reminded me of, you know, a lot of the cartoons when we were kids that were kind of, there were jokes that we didn't get, we didn't realize until mm-hmm. we're adults. I'm like, oh, I see what they were doing there. And then Colleen and I rented out of the Redbox tonight, The Big Short. That was the Ryan Gosling, Steve Carell. Is
Where
there anybody else famous in that?
Others.
Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Based on the book by Michael Lewis, the guy who wrote Moneyball. And it was about the people that shorted the housing market that knew that the housing market was going to collapse because all of these subprime loans that were packaged into bonds
mm-hmm.
and that eventually variable interest rates were going to kick in and jack the prices way up. People would not be able to pay it. There was going to be massive foreclosures. The bonds would fall, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys made billions based on what the banks were doing at the time. It's a very tough concept, right, for a movie to
mm-hmm.
talk about the housing market and mortgages and, you know, stuff that I'm not going to understand, that's for sure. And I thought it was interesting how the movie would try to – they knew this going in. Said, okay, we're going to make a movie about this, but this is boring as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's interesting what happened, to try to explain this stuff is just impossible. How are we going to do this? So they tried to find creative ways to explain what was going on at different points in the movie. For example, Margot Robbie, who's a beautiful actress, who was in, I believe, Wolf on Wall Street, whatever, some other movies, I can't remember what, but she's gorgeous, stunning. They had her in a bubble-filled bathtub drinking champagne explaining some of this. And they said, now let's go to Margot Robbie in a bathtub to explain this. So you would pay attention, mm-hmm. and then she'd tell you what's going on and explain it to you. Yeah. And it was pretty funny. And then they cut to another part where Selena Gomez, pop star Selena Gomez, and some economist are sitting at a blackjack table explaining how some other part works. And then they go to Anthony Bourdain, the famous chef, and his was the only part I understood. He said, basically, on Friday, I ordered 100 pounds of fish because I'm going to have this great sale tonight.
Right.
So I got all this fish at my restaurant, and for whatever reason, people don't show up, people don't like fish anymore, whatever. People don't buy all my fish. I still got 30 pounds of fish left. Am I just going to throw all that fish in the garbage? No. I'm going to make a fabulous fish stew tomorrow with day-old fish. They don't know it's day-old fish. It still tastes wonderful. Everybody's going to love it.
Right.
And he was explaining how they repackaged these mortgages that were failing in other things and then put them in something else. And the credit ratings never went down and yada, yada, and yada. And it was an interesting movie, but it was a tough follow. Did you enjoy it when you watched it, Raj?
You know what? I was following along at the beginning, and then when they first broke the fourth wall and spoke right to you in trying to explain these things, I'm like, wow, that's an unusual concept for a film. And I became more interested. So by the end of the movie, there was one or two spots where I kind of got a little twisted around a little bit with the explanation. And I was really trying to follow it intently, but I really did enjoy it. And I think if I watched it another time, I'd follow it even better. But I like that kind of stuff. And I think it's different because I love news. I love learning all the background about stuff, historical things, the reasons why things happen. And so I'm really into that. So that's why I was really into the movie.
Yeah, if you're fascinated by the history of it, it's good. You know, they tried to play it both ways, to explain it to you, let you know what happened and how these people profited from it, but also keep it sexy, keep it fun, keep it interesting. And I thought they straddled that line pretty well.
Yeah.
And Steve Carell plays a great character in it. So it's certainly worth a watch, but you're going to have to work at it.
You got to pay attention.
When Jack or Colleen would talk during it, I had to keep pausing. I'm like, we're going to kind of have to not talk through this movie or else we're going to get lost.
Right.
So I enjoyed it. It's definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, good. Well, I'm glad you finally got around to it.
Me too. Trump tax returns. So it's funny. This is like, I don't know, 8 months ago now when Trump was first floating this idea of running. Mm-hmm. I was filling in for Justin, I think, on the download. And I was sitting with Rob Martier and he said, Trump's never running for president. I'm like, why? I think he's going to.
Oops.
Because he'll never release his tax returns. So I've given Rob a hard time ever since saying, see, he's running. But Rob was right. He ain't going to release his tax returns. He's not doing it.
Yeah.
And at first it was, I'm involved in an audit. And, of course, I can't release them until the audit is over. I really want to. I'm going to as soon as I can, but I can't until the audit's over. So then the IRS publicly said, actually, he is free to release his tax return whenever he wants. It doesn't matter that he's being audited. There's no problem on our end. He can release his tax return whenever he wants. Trump has seemingly ignored that. I don't know why any journalist doesn't seem to call him out on that because he keeps saying, well, I'm under an audit. I can't release him until the audit's over. I never hear the journalist say, the IRS has said you can. Right. It's up to you. So he hasn't dealt with that. But now he's added the twist of there's nothing interesting in there anyways. There's nothing to learn from them. He's just declaring that, you know, he's talked about how his tax return is the size of like 10 encyclopedias.
Right.
But now he's saying there's nothing to learn from them. There's nothing you can learn from them. There's nothing in there. So now he's just blowing it off as I'm not going to release it because there's nothing for it. There's nothing. It means nothing. There's nothing to learn in there.
But does he have to?
He does not have to. It's not the law that a presidential candidate has to release their tax returns. It's been tradition ever since 76.
Sure.
Every presidential candidate has done it. I don't know why that started. Was that in the wake of Watergate that people felt we needed to know more about our presidential candidates? I don't know the history. I was five.
I think that it has to do with the fact that the vast majority of those running for the presidency are public employees, senators, congressmen, other federal officials or people who are on the public payroll, and that they probably felt compelled to say, well, look, here's what my wife and I have made. Here's where we've contributed. Here's this, blah, blah, blah. Everything's above board. We're not being dishonest. We're not trying to cover anything up. But I think it mainly kind of had to do with the fact that our tax dollars are paying for these people. Now, Trump has never held public office.
Right.
He's a private citizen. He doesn't need to show anyone his tax return, legally or illegally.
Legally, nobody has to. It's just been tradition for about 40 years now that you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he is apparently going to break with that tradition, it seems. Now, he keeps insisting, I'd love to release him before the election. I don't know if I can. The audit's going on. I'd love to, but there's nothing to learn in there. So now he's kind of trying to set the seeds of, hey, there's nothing to learn in there anyways.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. I'm not releasing him. Somebody who has been sued by Donald Trump, who has had access to his returns, but says he cannot legally speak about them,
right,
has said that there's plenty to learn from his returns, that I've seen them and people should see them because it, you know, it will do a lot of things. Verify, is he as charitable as he says he is?
Mm-hmm.
Verify his worth. Show
his
source,
business dealings.
His business dealings and is everything on the up and up. How much is he paying in taxes? That could be the thing he doesn't want people to see is all the different techniques he says. And he has said publicly, I do whatever I can to pay as little in taxes as I can. And and I don't quibble with that or fault him for that. I think it's every American's right to legally pay as little tax as humanly possible. We pay a heck of a lot of taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever legal means that the government has given you to pay less in tax, take advantage of it. You should. But is he doing everything, you know, will people be upset by what he's doing? Or if we find out that he's not paying as much in taxes as we would think a man who claims he's worth billions and billions should? I don't know. I don't know why he really doesn't want to do it. It might partly be he doesn't want to give competitors an advantage in business of seeing the way he does his business. Maybe that would be insight into his life. He doesn't want competition to have.
That's true, too.
I don't know.
Because he's still making deals.
That's the thing is, I haven't heard anybody ask him what will happen if he becomes president to Trump, you know, incorporated.
Yeah, right.
Who's going to run that? Will his son just take it over? Will he put it in a blind trust? Or will, because I don't see him saying, yeah, I'll set that aside for 4 years.
No.
And I don't see, even though he's got his family very involved in his business, he doesn't seem like the type who's going to say, son, you just take that over. I'll get back to it in 4 or 8 years. It's fine. You know, I think he's still going to want to have his hands in that. Yeah. Suddenly a Trump Tower somewhere was failing. I don't see him just going, well, that's not my job right now. You know, I think he'd be making some calls, which could get him into hot water.
How distracted would he be with all that?
Not just that, but I mean, there's got to be some legalities involved there. If the sitting president calls somebody to intervene on a deal, that would look bad.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. But the upside, if he does become president, now he's got a pension.
Yes.
Doesn't have to worry much about, you know, the properties anymore. Now he's got a set pension.
True.
For his retirement.
True.
You know.
And probably medical care for the rest of his life. What would he do? What do you think he would do about Air Force One? Do you think he'd redo that? Would he keep the Trump plane instead?
Ooh, interesting. Well, they'd make him take Air Force One because of the
security. I suppose,
because
the way it's outfitted.
Yeah.
They'd make him. You don't make Donald do anything.
I'm the president.
It's huge. Trump plane is huge. It's huge. Fine. It's huge. It's got shag. I like shag.
Orange shag.
You know it's got shag. You know it's got shag.
On the walls, too.
My first act as president, I will repeal all the spray tan laws and all the self-tanning laws.
There you go.
Teenagers will be able to self-tan again. They want to look more like President Trump. Yeah. George Zimmerman.
Oh, gosh.
This week put up for auction the gun he used to kill Trayvon Martin. I didn't realize, I don't pay attention to George Zimmerman.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's really a lunatic, isn't he?
He's had his moments.
He puts it up for auction in order to, he says, fight the Black Lives Matter movement.
Yeah.
So this is the great thing about the world today. The awful thing about the world and the great thing about the world. The internet is this terrible, awful place a lot of times.
Right.
But it also can be brilliant. So people basically hijack the online sale of this gun with false bids.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe somebody named Racist McShootface drove it up to like $65 million.
Yeah.
So they had to pull it off.
Right.
Racist McShootface is a wonderful name for somebody who wants to buy George Zimmerman's gun. So good for them for mucking up his plans there.
Yeah. It's funny. Bodie McBoatface.
Bodie McBoatface was, and that was a great story. So was this in the UK? There was some vessel, maybe it was Australia, some new government vessel, a research vessel, or a rescue vessel. For whatever reason, they had people vote online as to what they should name the boat.
Right.
And, of course, you can't do anything serious online and have people vote on it. Not right. if it's binding, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So what ended up getting nominated and winning by most votes, this boat became named Bodie McBoatface. And they're sticking to it, right?
Yeah.
From what we heard, they're going to paint Bodie McBoatface on the side of this ship. That's not that bad, actually.
It's
pretty
cute.
Funny.
I think it's cute. They should have gone with it.
Well, they are, aren't they?
No.
They pulled back from Bodie McBoatface?
Yeah.
I thought it won fair and square, and they're doing it.
But that doesn't mean that they win.
Oh, I thought it was binding arbitration.
No way. No. They said no, and they named it something else.
Well, that's a shame.
I know. What a ripoff. Talk about bait and switch.
Bodie McBoatface is a great name for a ship.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bummer. Hey, The Simpsons, we're going to speak in a little bit here with Al Jean. He's an executive producer on The Simpsons. They're having a live episode this weekend, Raj.
I heard about that, and I actually read the story about how they were going to do it and prepare for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, it's a little bit of false advertisement because it's not a live show.
Right.
They're doing a regular show, but at the end, Homer Simpson will take live questions from people who call into a toll-free number.
I think it's only like a three-minute segment.
Three-minute segment where he's going to answer questions, yes. And somehow there's technology that they can animate him as they go. He doesn't even have to have electrodes on his face or anything like that. There's some way they're going to do this. We'll talk to Al Jean about that in the next hour. And also Eric Davis, our friend from movies.com, will get on the phone with us, talk about any good movies that are out there this weekend and what's upcoming. So lots to do. Stay with us right here. Matt Bubala with you on Radio 720 WGN. The Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. Secret Service said Thursday was investigating statements made by Donald Trump's longtime butler, Anthony Senecal, on Facebook calling for President Obama to be killed. That's not good for Donald.
Nope.
Senecal, who is 74, now the unofficial historian at Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate. Let's think about that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
He has an unofficial historian at his estate in Florida. For what?
Oh, it's a very historic area down there in Florida.
I know. So
Who knows what's underneath that estate?
Being historical about Florida or about Trump himself? Because it's huge. I've had a big life. It's huge. It's awesome. It's huge.
I need a guy.
He confirmed to Mother Jones that he did author the posts. To all my friends on Facebook, just a short note to you on our puss-headed president. This character, who I refer to as Zero, should have been taken out by our military and shot as an enemy agent in his first term, he said in a post on Wednesday, which was visible only to his Facebook friends but was published by Mother Jones. Instead, he remains in office doing everything he can to gut the America we all know and love. Jesus, people. The Trump campaign responded Thursday, criticizing the comments. Tony Senecal has not worked at Mar-a-Lago for years, but nevertheless, we totally and completely disavow the horrible statements made by him.
Jeez. And now they're calling for, someone's calling for an investigation. They want to, you know, because he's threatened, I'm doing air quotes, threatened the president.
Well, this guy has. I mean, some of the other posts are even worse. Senecal was Trump's personal butler for 17 years and closely followed the real estate magnate's tastes and proclivities. In a New York Times profile, Senecal said Trump likes his steak well done and does his own hair.
Well, see, there's the excuse.
I think that, I mean, let's think about this. He orders steak well done.
Yeah.
That should probably disqualify you right there from being president.
Yeah.
Who orders steak
you
well
never
done?
Steak
I'll weird. Go, I'll let you go all the way up to medium. Maybe even a medium well.
No.
But probably not even there, right?
No, going too far.
Medium's the farthest you get.
Yeah.
He likes his steak well done.
You might as well have a piece of jerky if you're going to do that.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It, like, takes all the taste out of a piece of meat.
Senecal retired as Trump's butler in 2009, but he told Mother Jones he continues to give tours at the Mar-a-Lago estate. Spokeswoman for the Trump campaign told Mother Jones this individual has not worked at Mar-a-Lago for many years.
Ooh.
Maybe if we had the tax returns, we'd know.
Yeah.
Ricky Gervais is predicting that Trump will win the presidency. Ted Cruz blames Fox News for Donald Trump's rise. Ted's not the only one. Newt Gingrich blamed Fox News for it. Now, did I hear that Newt Gingrich is actually a possibility for his running mate?
The name has been floated, and I don't know if it's been floated by the Trump people or by others. But, yep, that was a couple of days ago.
George Clooney vows there is not going to be a President Trump. I don't know how George is going to help with that, but
yeah, really.
Although he is raising a lot of money for Hillary with his dinners with him and Amal, but oh Lord. 6 more months, Raj, then we'll talk about something else.
These are heady times.
Heady times. Friend. Heady times.
Yeah.
And it's 4 in the morning. This is Chicago's very own 720. We'll get a little lighter in the next hour. Let's talk movies, let's talk The Simpsons, let's take a cleansing breath. Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. Here we are on the weekend. Is it time to get out and see a movie? Let's find out. Managing editor at movies.com and a contributing editor at Fandango. It's our guest, Eric Davis. Hey, Eric, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a couple weeks ago when we last talked and you were all about, even though it wasn't out just yet, Captain America Civil War. So, what do you think? It's done very well at the box office. My son went and saw it and he seemed to love it. Is it living up to the hype?
I think it's definitely living up to the hype. I mean, if you look at it, maybe it didn't gross as much as the Avengers did opening weekend or Avengers Age of Ultron, but it grossed almost $100 million more than the previous Captain America movie on its opening weekend. This is going to be the first movie, I think, that reaches $1 billion, although watch Zootopia, that could cross it too. But I think it's going to be the first movie that reaches $1 billion at the global box office this year. I think it's going to be the biggest movie of the summer in terms of box office, and it deserves it. It's Marvel's best movie, in my opinion. I think it's a really entertaining film, even if you're not a superhero fan. So, congrats to Marvel. Like, they did it again, and it's going to do well again this weekend. It will win the weekend again.
They've really, I mean, I know Star Wars, I think, is trying to emulate this, the spinoffs and all the characters and giving them their own stuff. And I would have thought that they would have run out of stories and cachet by now. So I'm really surprised that this many movies in with these characters, some movies with all of them together, some movies a little more standalone. I am very impressed that they're still doing as well as they are.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing about movies based on comic books, and I think what a lot of people don't realize is, you know, many of these comic books go back decades. And so there are countless storylines. There are, you know, there are giant universes. There are, you know, an exponential amount of characters that we haven't even seen on screen yet. And so what Marvel's doing is very smart. They're taking sort of the bones of these popular storylines, like Civil War is a very popular storyline from the comics, and then they're recreating and adding a bunch of stuff that's new to it, because these movies are not following the comics to a T. They're different in a lot of ways, but they're also similar in ways. So I think that, you know, there's always something to pull from when it comes to comics. And as long as you have talented writers and talented directors who all get in a room and say, you know, it would be really fun to take this story but play off of it in this way, then this genre will continue to thrive. I was speaking to Bryan Singer recently about X-Men Apocalypse, which comes out in a couple of weeks, about the future of the X-Men, and he's very excited to go. Even though we've seen 6 X-Men movies, there's still so many different directions that they haven't explored yet that I think fans will be very excited to see.
Does the X-Men do anything near what the Avengers do in their movies?
No, you know, they haven't been as successful. They do really well, I think. I think the X-Men movies do really, really well. But, you know, I think Fox hasn't found, I guess, what Marvel has found. And the Marvel has found this great mix of tone and just the way they introduce their films. You know, they really hit a groove in terms of this cinematic universe and connecting them all together. When the X-Men films started, I mean, you give them credit back in 2000, and you give Bryan Singer credit, too. He really is like the godfather of the modern superhero film. But, you know, because X-Men started so long ago, they never really had a chance to take advantage of the cinematic universe, I think, until now. And so I think they're just starting to get into it as we speak.
You know, I never thought about it that much, but what impresses me some of the most about the all these movies with these characters now is that it kind of really started with Iron Man, and that he had all these popular movies. And Iron Man, to me, wasn't a character I knew growing up, wasn't a character I cared about. Captain America I'd really heard of. Some of these other ones, Hulk, things like that, you'd really heard of. That Iron Man took off. Do you credit that more to Robert Downey Jr., to script writing, or how did that happen?
Yeah, I think all of it. I think Robert Downey Jr. was a huge part of it, his performance, script writing. You know, Marvel sort of saying, let's do something that these other films aren't doing. Let's create this interconnected universe and bring them all together in an Avengers kind of movie. And Bryan Singer spoke to I asked him specifically, I said, what is the key to the superhero genre continuing to thrive? And he said, it's going to be films like Iron Man, films like Deadpool. It's going to be taking these lesser-known characters and really finding an access point for them that create a captivating movie and get people excited. You know, Iron Man, not the most popular character. Even Deadpool, he's popular. His comics sell a lot of comics, but, you know, the general person doesn't know who Deadpool is, and look at how phenomenal that film did. So yeah. I think that is going to be the key to seeing this genre thrive, because there's only so many movies where we can see all the Avengers together fighting together. You know, we're going to need to see new characters, and the key is going to be finding these lesser-known characters and exploiting them in a way that gets people really excited to keep watching.
Well, one of the new characters they brought into this movie, though certainly not a lesser-known character, was Spider-Man. That's his first appearance with these guys, right?
This is his first appearance in terms of being with Marvel Studios, yes. This was a game-changing deal. It happened last year because Sony owns the film rights to Spider-Man. Disney has the film rights to Marvel Studios, the Avengers, and stuff like that. Those two studios created a deal where Marvel Studios would produce Spider-Man in movies and put him in with the Avengers and all of that, but Sony would distribute his solo films. And so we're going to get the first solo Spider-Man film next year from Sony, but Marvel is in charge of its production. And so it's a really wow. weird thing. We've never seen this before in Hollywood when it comes to these kinds of big ticket characters. But you can see just when Marvel touches the character, how different he is and how true to his comic origins. You know, in the comics, he's a wisecracking teenager. And watching that dynamic, watching a wisecracking teenager get thrown into the mix with, you know, the Avengers, is really fascinating. It's a cool dynamic to watch, and I feel like every line, every moment that Spider-Man is in Civil War just goes towards advancing that version of the character. And when I talk to people after Civil War, the first thing that comes out of their mouth is just how excited they are to see this new version of Spider-Man. So they accomplished that, which I think was pretty impressive.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what's in the box office this weekend. We'll do that with Eric Davis from Movies.com next here on 720 WGN. Happy Bali here with you on Radio 720 WGN. We're chatting with Eric Davis from Movies.com. We just talked a lot about Captain America, but let's talk about what else. I mean, Captain America is certainly still out there. A lot of movies still out there. The Jungle Book has done incredibly well. The Huntsman, Winter's War is out there. I don't know how great that's doing or not. Keanu, Zootopia, of course, has done pretty well. Tell me about the new movies that we could see this weekend, Eric.
Well, the big one is probably Money Monster. This has star power. George Clooney, Julia Roberts. Jodie Foster, the actress, directed it. George Clooney plays a Jim Cramer-type financial TV host. So think about a CNBC kind of show. And an irate investor hijacks the show while it's on the air. Julia Roberts plays the producer who's in charge of the show. And the movie, what's unique about this film is that it plays out in real time. And so every second counts, every minute counts. And so the length of the movie is basically the length of this story. And it's what happens when, you know, this guy takes over this financial show. Of course, there's, you know, there's a whole thing that involves his story and this corruption. And there's all kinds of twists and turns that go into it. Maybe don't watch the trailer because I feel like the trailer gives away a lot of this film. Mm-hmm. But if you like George Clooney and Julia Roberts, and they have terrific chemistry together, I really like the two of them together, then, you know, it's an interesting film to go see. And what's also interesting about this film is that it speaks to a trend that we're beginning to see. Look at The Big Short, a film like 99 Homes. We're starting to see these movies that speak to the anger that people had after the financial collapse of 2008 and sort of what happened and how they're picking up the pieces and sort of, you know. So I think we're seeing a trend of those films now. I don't know if they're going to have an impact that's larger or greater than what we see on the screen, if people are going to walk out and be like, I am angry about this. I'm going to go write a letter to my congressman. I don't know if we're going to see that kind of impact, but we're definitely seeing a trend here when it comes to movies about the impact of the financial collapse, and I wouldn't be surprised if this isn't the last one we see.
All right, but is Money Monster a good movie? Do you think people will go see it?
I think people will go see it. It's okay. It's not great.
Yeah.
But you know, I like Big Short better. I like 99 Homes better. It's not great, but it's good and it's entertaining. And I think that the star power will get people into the seats. I don't know if it's definitely not going to compete for the top spot at the box office, but I do think that it could compete for number two. But don't be surprised if The Jungle Book ends up at number two again. That is just a film that keeps on chugging along, surprised a lot of people. So I could see The Jungle Book even getting in there at number two and Money Monster at number three, but we'll see. It'll be those three, I think.
Well, what about the movie, the scary movie of the week? It's called The Darkness.
Yeah, the problem with The Darkness is that this is a film that didn't screen for film critics. And if you are familiar with the world of film critics, when a movie doesn't screen for them in advance of it being released so people can write their reviews for the newspapers and stuff, it's not a good sign. This film about a family goes to the Grand Canyon. The son takes a little souvenir back with him. Unfortunately for the family, this supernatural entity is attached to that souvenir. And then that entity wreaks havoc on this family and sort of tries to tear them apart. Kevin Bacon plays the dad. Rhoda Mitchell plays the mother. It's okay. It's kind of a by-the-numbers horror film. There's nothing in there it's saying, you got to go see it. It's okay. It's mediocre. If you're looking to itch a thriller horror scratch, I would say go see Green Room, which is a film I highly recommend, and that's in theaters.
Green Room. Okay, well, at movies.com, I was scrolling around there earlier today. There's a story talking about a movie called The Woods that has a trailer out now and calls itself one of the scariest movies ever made. You've seen the trailer. What are you hoping for when The Woods comes out?
I have seen the trailer. This is an interesting film. This comes out in September. And that quote, one of the scariest movies ever made, is a quote that's in the trailer. And so they've shown this film to some critics, some film critics in advance. And that happens sometimes. You'll see these films that even are 6-7 months out will show a film to critics just to kind of gauge their interest in it and then use quotes of theirs after in its first trailer. What we know about this film is that it's found footage. It looks about a bunch of kids that go into the woods and something bad happens. But there are a lot of people very excited about it. Like one guy called it, and I know him very well. He's a big-time horror aficionado, called it one of the scariest movies ever made, which is a big deal. So there's obviously something else at play with this film that we're not aware of yet. You know, the trailer looks creepy, but also looks kind of like your standard kids go into the woods, bad stuff happens kind of movie. But there's something else going on, something that we don't know yet, that maybe we'll know closer to release. It doesn't have a bunch of stars in it or anything. The director and the writer have done a couple of movies that I really liked, one called You're Next, another one called The Guest. They're really talented guys. So I'm excited for it just because I like their work.
Yeah.
But there is something to this film that we just don't know yet. So stay tuned.
When you
we'll
say
found, September 16th, I think.
When you say found footage, Kids in the Woods, I think of Blair Witch Project. Does this evoke a little bit of that, do you think?
It could. It could definitely. I mean, that's, that's a classic property that we haven't seen them sort of return to yet.
Yeah.
And I feel like that it's, you know, in this day and age where we milk horror franchises, you know, 7, 8, 9 installments. Look at Saw, look at The Purge, Election Year, which comes out. This is like the fourth Purge movie, third Purge movie. We've seen a bunch of Paranormal Activity movies. So you would think at some point somebody would say, hey, remember that Blair Witch movie?
Yeah.
Why don't we return to that world?
Let's do that again.
Something. So it could be, it could have nothing to do with the Blair Witch and just be something completely different. So I have no idea at this point, but it'll be interesting to keep an eye on it. And I definitely think that to keep an eye on this movie, I think there's something special with it.
Another movie that came out recently but is not getting a lot of notice is Elvis and Nixon with one of our favorite Chicago actors, Michael Shannon. How is that movie doing, and what are you hearing about it?
I don't think it's doing fantastically. I really enjoyed it. I think I've seen it, and Michael Shannon as Elvis. And Michael Shannon wouldn't be the first person you would think of.
No,
as
not,
Elvis
at all.
President. Not at all, right? And Kevin Spacey plays Richard Nixon, and he wouldn't be the first person you think of as Richard Nixon either, but he does a really great job sort of becoming Nixon. But Shannon, you know, understand that this is based on a real-life story. It took place at a time in Elvis's life when he was really disillusioned with society, with teen drug use. And Elvis, early 70s, went to the White House front lawn and said, I want to talk to Richard Nixon. I want to become an undercover federal agent for the U.S. government. This really happened. And so this film is about this story and this historic meeting that Elvis had with President Nixon about him wanting to become an undercover federal agent for the government. And he wanted to bust teens using drugs at backstage at his shows.
Now,
this
what
really
was
legitimately
that,
happened.
Well, I know they had that meeting, but there's always been, did he really want to do that, or was he looking to get badges because that helped him get access to drugs? It's not like he was Mr. Pure, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the film definitely plays it the way where Elvis really wanted to become this sort of official for the government. He really wanted to help. He was very disillusioned with society, very disillusioned with everything that was going on, and wanted and felt like he could help. He could become like this big deal and help out. So that's how the movie plays it. The movie never really gives you, I mean, although Elvis is not, you know, the Elvis that you would think in this film, he seems like he's got a couple of screws loose. They don't give you the they don't play both sides. They don't kind of leave you saying, oh, well, was Elvis serious or did he want to use it for did he have ulterior motives?
Yeah,
they kind of play it straight that one way.
All right. Next week, is there anything that you could say? All right. If you're waiting, nothing thrills you this week. Here's what's coming up next that you're excited about.
Yeah, I think there's two movies. I think the Neighbors sequel is going to surprise a lot of people. If you like that, for the first Neighbors movie with Seth Rogen and Zac Efron, the sequel, and you wouldn't think about it. If you watch the trailers, you say, oh, it's just the same exact movie with a sorority living next door. But the movie's going to surprise a lot of people. People are saying it's one of the best comedy sequels ever made. So that's going to be a surprise. And also The Nice Guys is one that I really like. That's written and directed by Shane Black, who was a guy who was very successful in his early on in his career. He wrote Lethal Weapon. He wrote The Last Boy Scout, The Long Kiss Goodnight. He's a really great writer, sharp writer, and he directed this film, another buddy cop movie. People are saying it's the next Lethal Weapon. Russell Crowe, Ryan Gosling, set in the 70s. Watch the trailer for that because it looks spectacular. So those two, if you're looking to itch a comedy scratch, those two – or scratch a comedy itch, I should say. those two movies next weekend, I think you won't be disappointed in either of them.
We just saw the commercial for Bad Moms, and it's one of those where I'm praying they didn't blow it all in the commercial. But it looks—I have four kids at home, so it looked hilarious. When does that open, and what's the hopes for that?
Yeah, that comes out later this summer, and I actually saw a bunch of footage from that at CineVegas. CinemaCon in Vegas. Mm-hmm. It's a convention for theater owners a couple of weeks ago. And it does look really funny, I think. And I think it's going to speak exactly to guys like you and you know, parents.
Yeah.
It looks like a lot of parent humor, a lot of mom humor. I think it's going to be a huge girls' night out movie as well.
Yeah.
And Kristen Bell, really great cast. Kind of reminds me of like Mean Girls meets Bridesmaids in a way, where, you know, this instead of a bunch of kind of young girls going on a bachelorette party, it's a bunch of moms who sort of just lose it. And this one mom who's kind of fighting the Mean Girls-esque PTA moms. But, yeah, I mean, you watch that trailer, and there's just a lot of relatable parenting humor. I love the part when she goes to the PTA meeting and they're talking about all the things that you can't include in the food. No peanuts, no nuts, no this, no that. And that really, you know, speaks to me on the sheets that I get home from my kids with, you know, 17 million different things that you can't include in the food that you bring into school. So I think there's just going to be a lot of really great relatable humor in there for parents and for women who are looking to get out for a girls' night. That comes out later this summer. I think it'll do well, yeah.
Eric Davis is a writer at movies.com. You can catch him at fandango.com. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us.
You got it, man. Take care.
You're listening to the Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. It's the Matt Bubala Show on WGN, and I've been a Simpsons fan ever since I can remember because the show's been around, I think, my entire life. And now, I'm guessing because they've completely run out of ideas, they are somehow doing a live episode of The Simpsons this weekend. Joining us on the phone is executive producer Al Jean. Hey, Al, how are you?
I'm good. Very excited about this Sunday.
I imagine you are. Is that, am I being unfair by saying they've done everything and they've run out of ideas? So they said, what the hell? I know it's animated, but let's just do it live somehow.
Well, I might put it in a slightly more upbeat way. I would say this is a technology that has been developed. And we toyed with using it for promotion for the Simpsons movie in 2007, but it wasn't as good then. And I think it's come to the point where we can do it for 3 minutes and it works. Dan Castellaneta is in a studio and he's going to talk. And when he moves and talks, it's animated immediately as Homer and looks like the show. So I'm really excited about it. I really, you know, I don't know whether it'll be good or bad or in between, but it'll be fun.
Well, I've read that there, you know, while the technology's come a long way, this should look good. There are backup plans in place in case everything goes haywire, right?
Yes, if for God forbid there was like a power blackout on the West Coast, we have a backup segment recorded already with the same technology, so that wouldn't be live. That you would only see that if something really serious happened. So, you know, I'm sure everything will be fine.
Now, the way this is going to work is people are being encouraged to call a phone number to ask their questions. Will those questions be recorded and then you'll play the audio, or how's that going
to
work?
You're going to talk to them live.
Oh, okay.
They're being asked to call 8 Eastern, 7 Central. And then the segment starts about 25 minutes later. What's probably going to happen is the phones will fill up and we'll have everybody on hold. You have to be 18, and the question has to be something of Homer, like not about Dan or the behind-the-scenes
right.
stuff about the show, and funny. And we'll get on as many as we can. But, you know, it's your chance to have your voice on The Simpsons for all eternity.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, you said that it looks like Homer, so this is going to look like hand-drawn animation like the mm-hmm. show actually looks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we put a still out. You know, Homer's in a Fox secret bunker. You know, and we put the still so you can see it looks just like the show.
Yeah.
There's some background jokes we've pre-animated, but the Homer voice and action is all live, and the interaction is all of the moment. So we're just going to be flying blind.
And the technology isn't like where Dan will have all these electrodes hooked up to his face. It's sort of more simple than that.
But they don't now. It's it covers his motions without actually having any electrical connection.
So if he moves his face to the left or right or smiles real big or laughs real loud, the animation should be able to keep up and do that.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, we'll see about that now.
We will see.
is Dan the kind of guy that's going to decide to mess with you guys in the middle of it and start picking his nose or anything?
You know, he does a couple things you might not expect, but and, of course, I should always mention there's a seven-second delay, so yeah. You try a Baba Booey on us, it's not getting on. But why would you do that?
Well, way to put it out there and encourage people to think about how they could trick you during this thing.
Well, believe me, I'm sure that's the first thing half the people hear.
I would imagine. Well, it is The Simpsons. It's not 60 Minutes, yeah. so there is a lot of mayhem. Hopefully, I'm hoping that the voice of Bart gets through and tries to prank his dad, just like he would if it were Mo doing it.
You know, we thought about it. We thought about having, like, Nancy or, you know, the voice of Marge, Julie Kavner, call in. But then we thought that's just depriving a fan of one shot
right.
of getting on. So
right.
The calls are the calls. They're the real people.
Well, if this runs smoothly, can I imagine that, you know, somewhere down the road maybe you guys would try this again?
If it runs great, nothing that's ever done well on TV has never been repeated.
That's not true. There is only originality on television. Nothing is ever copied or repeated.
Yeah, only disaster is not repeated. So
actually, I think people would argue differently, but I think you're right.
That could be, but yeah. Well, it's funny. Shows like, you know, Battlestar Galactica, which wasn't a hit the first time, was a big one the second.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the technology got better, right? And so that's what's going on here. Do you ever see down the road? I mean, you've seen this work, I imagine. You guys have tested this out, I'm sure, a million times. Do you ever see a place down the road where maybe a whole episode could be done live if the technology continues to improve?
My honest answer to that is way down the road because, you know, we can't interact with the background. We could have actually had two actors hooked up. But we thought, no, let's just keep it simple. And Dan's so great at improv. But, you know, I think, you know, certainly the show that we do, the full animation people are used to, they wouldn't want to see 30 minutes of this as it stands. But, you know, I mean, in years to come, anything can happen.
I was teasing you at the beginning that you guys have run out of ideas. You're how many episodes in? Is it almost 600 episodes?
This episode airing will be 595, and I can confidently say we have four more ideas left.
Well, you say that, but the truth is that the way The Simpsons works, those episodes have to have been planned out forever ago because you guys can't just write a script on Monday and have this thing ready to go the next week because of the animation process. How far in advance does The Simpsons still have to work?
Well, it's 8 months, and in fact, there is an episode that precedes the live action that's a regular episode. And to tell you the truth, we've already recorded our 600th episode. That'll air next fall.
That's not until next fall. And I joked about running out of ideas. Do you guys ever sit and go, there's nothing left? I mean, it's a curse and a blessing that nobody ever has to change ages on the show, right? I mean, you never get to 600 episodes because, you know, Bart would be in jail by now, of course, but... there's also got to be
jail at best.
At best, if we're lucky, he's still alive. But is that kind of you're ever in the writer's room and everybody's like, yeah, I can't think of anything we haven't done. It's been 600 stinking episodes.
Yeah, we have a retreat every year, and it's harder every year. That's probably the most difficult part of the job. But it's such a rich universe, you know, and it's about a family, which everybody comes from. So, you know, we only do stories that we feel really have something to say. And I haven't felt that that's passed yet. So, I mean, the last two we did, I thought, were really, you know, great, beautiful, gorgeous animation. This is exciting to do. Our finale the following week, I think, is really cool. So, you know, everything, you know, passes at one point. But,
right.
We're still excited.
Well, and I don't know my TV history well enough, but I'm guessing 600 episodes, you guys are well past the longest running sitcom ever, right?
We're past everything. The last one, except one show. We passed Lassie a few weeks ago.
Okay.
Which somehow squeezed out 592. The only remaining one is Gunsmoke, which was 635.
Wow. So you wouldn't hit that next year then because it's still only like, what are you guys doing now, 22 episodes?
Yeah. Next year we would get up to 518. I'm sorry,
618
by the end of next year.
So you'd need to go into to another season. And how long is the current contract with Fox?
Well, we're guaranteed through season 28. We're recording that now. But on the plus side, the cast has a deal for two more years that Fox can pick up as an option. That's usually the biggest question mark is whether the cast will re-sign. So if Fox wants two more years, they could do it. That would get us to like about 669 episodes.
Wow. And do you see an end in sight for you personally, Al? I mean, you've been working on this show forever.
Someday I personally will end, yes.
Okay, yes, you will. But before then, I mean, I was teasing you that you have no drive, clearly, because you just decided, oh, I'll just stick with this show forever. And, you know, millennials these days, you gotta change jobs every 2 weeks. But here you've been for your whole adult life just about working on The Simpsons.
The thing about The Simpsons, and I'll inject a serious note, you know, Sam Simon and Gary Shandling were two people that were really influential in my career, Sam on The Simpsons and Shandling on his show. They both have passed away, sadly, before The Simpsons ended, and I never would have thought that was going to happen. So you just never know how long The Simpsons will go.
Yeah. But is it still a joy for you all the time? Do you ever get wanderlust, or you think, you know what? I imagine a lot of times when people find great success on Friends or Seinfeld or any show that just becomes part of the culture, it gets to such a heated point that you think, all right, what's next? And with The Simpsons, you didn't do that. You didn't jump out when it was very hot early on. You stayed with the show. Does it become one of those things where it's like a ball player where you're like, you know what, I know this is only for a certain amount of time. I'm going to enjoy every moment I possibly can with it?
Yeah, you know, it's the best. I would never want to go to another show. And honestly, I had opportunities to work for Seinfeld and for Larry Sanders. And I actually, you know, one of the people would say, I think I made the right move not going to those great shows. You know, The Simpsons is just, there's no better place to be.
So I was asking you about, you know, the limitations, both of the animation and the age of the character staying the same. But I imagine the freedom is also incredible. Is it still, do you guys, I imagine all the time you're saying, well, this is something we'd never be able to get away with on The Gary Shandling Show or anything else where it's live action. Do you guys really?
Yeah, in terms of like the things you can do, the topics you can tackle, there's a little bit of a concern because we're an 8 o'clock show on a network that, you know, we're not, you know, say like a violent video game, but we can make fun of them.
Yeah. So wait, are you actually telling me that you guys now face that you're not crude enough sometimes for prime time, when at the very beginning there was all sorts of questions about whether it was too crude and too much of a looks like a children's show, but it's not for children? Have things swung so far that now you guys are the
table? Well, things have swung. We definitely have always just been true to ourselves. We just do what we think is funny. The pendulum has swung enormously between 1989 and today in terms of what a cartoon is. And yeah, there's stuff that's like, you know, something like Archer, you know, was nothing like that was on the air then. But we're just who we are, and we're not going to try to change to adapt to any, you know, sort of environment or try to, like, not be ourselves. We're just doing The Simpsons.
You know, it's funny, Al, that you guys have lasted as long as you have. You're still going so strong. I mean, it was probably over a decade ago, I remember watching the episode where The Simpsons made fun of their future selves, like after the show's off the air and they do a reunion show and Bart's all grown up, there's a replacement Maggie. You guys made fun of yourselves for that so long ago and yet still have kept going.
That
was 16 years ago. So that's only about half of your career of The Simpsons run. Do you see, what do you guys, ever think about, should we make changes, or is it just always, it's family, this is what they are, characters somewhat come and go, you've done some things over the years, but you ever toy with, let's make them older again, let's do something like that?
Oh, I'm adamantly against any sort of permanent change, because we can do episodes where you see the future, and like you mentioned, Explorer, you know, for one episode of the show, but I think people want to see the show that they're used to, they want the same basic format, and if there was a demarcation where suddenly Bart's 15, people would go, oh, that's when I stopped watching it.
Yeah. I quit when he turned 15. So almost
like Happy Days, when Fonzie was the principal, I was like, okay.
Oh, you're not going with when he jumped the shark. Well, that's
no, mine was when he, jumping a shark is kind of like principal. Something you could conceivably do, but becoming the principal.
When he clearly had never graduated from any school, probably.
Yeah, I was like, what happened?
That's funny. So this many episodes in, is there one moment in time, is there one episode that you can look back on and say that was, to me, either the most fun or the most poignant or the best one? We'll never top that.
I hope it's next Sunday.
Of course you do. Of course you do. Well, the cast has been incredibly resilient. I know there have been some changes over the years. I have to tell you, in the last year, I did an interview with a gentleman who did a biography on Phil Hartman, and I can only imagine that there's probably been no greater loss along the way of The Simpsons, and the fact that you guys are probably now 20 or more years past when he was on the show, and he's still, his characters are still such an indelible mark on The Simpsons' legacy.
Well, I'd say certainly equal to him is Marcia Wallace, and both were brilliant, and both were wonderful people and are missed. And yeah, in those cases, there's nothing we, you know, could do except just say, well, those characters are retired. The silver lining for us is that they weren't, you know, the central characters in the show. But yeah, I mean, time passes. Both were sad losses for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so you know pretty far in advance. We know this weekend, this Sunday, is the live episode, and people can call and try to mess with the creators or just have some fun with The Simpsons if they can get through. But you know pretty far in advance, because of how far in advance you work on the shows, any, you know, season finale coming up in a few weeks, the 600th episode early next year, any big things you want to tease on the horizon for The Simpsons?
There's an episode where Burns gets an Oculus and asks the Simpson family, minus Homer, to voice his family in the Oculus because he wants a real life. We have a Halloween show that's a combination of Hunger Games and the California drought. And we have a Christmas show where it's a parody of Elf on the Shelf, where Maggie gets a little doll that is supposed to watch her all the time when she's bad or when she's good, and it makes her terrified.
The Treehouse of Horror episodes have always been one of my favorites. We would look forward to them every year. And as much freedom as you have with The Simpsons because of the animation and everything, do the writers find even more like, all right, now we can do this because it's the special episode?
Yes, absolutely. On the Treehouse, you get so much that you can do that it's amazing. And the directors, you know, the big, you know, work comes because you're doing three different sets of character designs and all these new sets. But everybody always rises and hits it out of the park. I'm always really amazed how great they look.
I always laugh at the beginning of the episode when they do the credits, and you always try to make something fun of people's names. And I imagine after a certain amount of years, you're like, all right, there's nothing left we can do with these names. We have to start reusing the names because there's only so much we can put into, you know, so-and-so bone, so-and-so, or whatever you did.
I know. Nobody thought that would last that long either. It's all pretty funny.
And the beginning theme with all the changes over the years, and I can't remember lately because I never catch it right at the beginning. Where are we at with the beginning of the show? Is that a standard thing now? Do we still change things every week?
Oh, yeah. In fact, what we've had lately is we've had guest animators like Banksy come in and do the couch gig, Guillermo del Toro, and those have been spectacular. We go put them online, and they've gotten you know, millions of views. Yeah, so we and, you know, we used to repeat couch gags. We used to do, like, the same one two or three times.
Yeah.
We never do that now. It's always different.
That's got to be. It's so funny that you're the only show that's lasted as long as you had and had pressure on the opening credits every week.
Yeah, and you know, as I say, it used to be you could kind of change them and you could...
cheat a little.
You know, get away with the same thing repeatedly, but not now.
Yeah, people would call you out on it right away, wouldn't they?
Yep.
Well, Al Jean, we really appreciate it. Executive producer of The Simpsons, until he dies, he's pretty much said he's going to, you know, ride this one out forever. So I hope you get another 30, 50 years in it, Al.
I hope so, too. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for jumping on the phone.
Thank you.
Matt Bubala with you on Radio 720 WGN.